And thanks once again to everybody who has made a contribution so far. And this is our first day of the spring membership campaign. Also want to thank everybody who came out last night to the mayoral and city council president debate that we held in Mount Vernon. I appreciate being involved, appreciate the candidates who came, and appreciate everybody who came out to Emmanuel Episcopal Church to talk to the candidates about their positions on the issues. And now, an update on the Key Bridge. On Monday, the Key Bridge Unified Command, overseeing the reclamation and recovery efforts in the Patapsco River, announced that a fourth body had been recovered from the wreckage of the collapsed bridge. The family asked that he not be identified until yesterday afternoon. Mexican officials said he is Carlos Daniel Hernandez. Mr. Hernandez is the fourth of six workers whose remains have been recovered. The bodies of two other workers, Miguel Luna and Jose Minor Lopez, have been yet to be found. We have an update on all of the developments around the Key Bridge tragedy here on Midday on Friday on the Midday News Wrap. And joining me now is Kevin Cowherd. He's an author and former award-winning sports columnist and features writer at the Baltimore Sun. And since leaving the Sun more than a decade ago, he's written six baseball novels for young readers with Orioles icon Cal Ripken Jr. He's also written six nonfiction books, including When the Crowd Didn't Roar, about the Orioles game that followed the Freddie Gray uprising in 2015. That was a game played in a stadium without fans. His latest book is a novel for adults, which explores the machinations of a group of people who see each other regularly when they exercise. It's called The Gym. And Kevin Cowherd joins us today in Studio A. It's good to see you, sir.
Good to see you again, Tom.
So, The Gym. I went this morning. Did you go?
I did.
Yeah. So it
8 o'clock.
Yeah.
I gotta get there early. I have to get it over with.
Yeah. I was there at 6:15. Not to one up you, but there is this group of us who's there, you know, most days of the week, and you do get to know them. There is a whole culture of folks who work out at the gym.
Absolutely. And you know, I've been a member of various gyms, Tom, for about 30 years now, and sometimes you're lucky and you fall in with a group that is like-minded, that likes to kid around, that makes working out easier. And I've found that in a number of different gyms. And I always wanted, even years ago, I wanted to write about this strange camaraderie that you can get at a gym. And it took me a long time to really come up with the idea. But I think, as far as I know, it's the only novel that I can think of that's set in a gym. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's a little unusual.
It is unusual. Yeah, and yeah, it's fun because, you know, I kept relating it to my experience over the years. I got to know you, frankly, and a lot of people at the Sun, at the Downtown Athletic Club, which is right across the street from the Sun.
Absolutely.
Which used to be at 501 North Calvert Street.
Yep.
So a lot of folks from the Sun newsroom used to come over either at lunch or in the morning,
yep,
before work. And workouts, you get to know all sorts of people at the gym.
Get to know all sorts of people, and sometimes, you know, you'll come to the gym and I don't like working out. I mean, I thankfully I'm disciplined enough that I show up there 3 days a week. But sometimes you really don't want to be there. You fall in with this group. Somebody comes up with an interesting topic. You might talk politics. You might talk what's happening in the city. You might talk sports. And it just, to me, it just takes your mind off the drudgery that is often working out. To me, it's drudgery, but I do it.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It is drudgery. And it's interesting to me that the kinds of people I get to meet at the gym are unlike, I mean, I would not meet them in any other social situation. I've known bus drivers. I've known, PhDs from Hopkins.
Exactly.
I've known, you know, stockbrokers. I've known all sorts of people in all sorts of different professions.
Right.
And it's great. I also find at our gym, because I'm still going to the DAC. I mean, I've been there now 42 years.
Wow.
Although to look at my waistline, you wouldn't imagine that could possibly be true. But it is one of the most diverse places to be for me. I was counting this morning because I knew I was going to be talking to you. There were 25 of us there a little bit after 6. And it was like split down the middle. There were 12 white folks, 12 black folks. There were a couple of other folks there. There was three Hispanic women,
yep,
and one Asian American woman. I mean, it's a great melting pot.
I said the same thing. I actually have that in the book, and I talk about the diversity in the gym that you're not going to, especially in a city like Baltimore, you're not going to find that everywhere. We know what churches are like on Sundays, but gyms are different. And we have the same thing at the gym that I work out now. It's the exact same thing. Nice blend of people. And to your point, there's lots of people I would have never met in any other walk of life. I wouldn't have met them socially. I wouldn't have met them anywhere else. So it's nice to run into folks like that.
Yeah, and sometimes when you run into them in places other than the gym, you hardly recognize them because they got clothes on.
that's another one of my lines. You're taking all my lines out of there. Exactly right.
So you center your book on a guy who is a columnist for a newspaper.
Yes.
Something you would know nothing about.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, you know, the protagonist of the book, as you start to talk about, he's lonely. He's overweight. He's reeling from a very nasty divorce. And he needs a redo in life. And this is what he finds at this gym. So one of the what I tell people about the book, Tom, it's about friendship, but it's also about redemption. And we can talk about what happens if you want to later on in the book. But basically, these folks, he's going to find wonderful friends at this gym, and they're going to find out that there's a member who is in their midst, who has a very dark past, and they vow to explore that. So there's a lot of different things happening in that book, but
yeah.
I hope it's all pulled together at the end.
And a little tribe does develop. There's the five of them. They call themselves the Big Five.
They call themselves the Big Five.
And they do get to know each other better,
mm-hmm,
and they decide they have common cause. Finding out some information about another person at the gym.
That's right.
Who does, in fact, have a very interesting past.
Yes. And there's a protagonist. The protagonist also develops a romantic relationship with one of the other members that he works out with. So, again, it's about friendship. It's about redemption. All these different themes seem to come together at the end, I hope.
Kevin Cowherd, the new book is called The Gym. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you'd like to chat with Kevin Cowherd, if you're one of the folks who used to read The Sun back in the day when Kevin was a columnist, or if you've read some of Kevin's other books, or if you've read this one, let us know. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. So Jack, the protagonist, falls in love with a young woman named Courtney, who's
right,
also got, you know, some stuff that she's dealing with in,
yes,
her past.
Yes.
Do you find that's something you've actually had experience with in real life, that the people actually met at the gym and then ended up in romantic relationships or,
yes,
even marriages?
Yes.
Because I've never found that.
Well,
yeah,
I'll tell you what, I think it has something to do with the fact that you and I go to the gym early. We're there, you know, the people that go to the gym early are there for working out. They're gym warriors. They want to get this workout over with. But if you go to any gym that I've ever been to around 4, 5, and 6 o'clock in the afternoon, that's when there's a lot of, flirting, sometimes coupling. I think it is a place where a lot of people do develop relationships, some of them romantic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
it's a great place to meet people, I suppose. I mean, I remember back in the 80s at our gym, there's a pool, and
yep,
I used to swim. I don't swim anymore. I should, but I don't. And there's a whirlpool thing,
yes,
next to the swimming pool,
yes,
at the DAC. And the whirlpool used to be crowded. I mean, sometimes you couldn't get a seat in the whirlpool,
yeah, yeah,
whereas the pool itself would be empty, or there'd be two people flopping,
yeah,
around,
yeah,
in there.
Yeah.
But, people, and back in those days, I mean, the whole thing was crazy. There were people with drinks and stuff in there.
I mean, there was
a bar at the DAC.
Exactly. two or three of the gyms that I belonged to in the past had bars. And so people would work out. People would be talking with, they'd be forming new relationships with people. And then they go upstairs and have a couple of cocktails. So it was a one-size-fits-all gym, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, one of my big claim to fames in 1983 was I used to hang out in the Whirlpool with Oprah Winfrey. She was a member of the gym. She was working at WJZ, and she used to go and swim and sit in the Whirlpool and stuff. And on more than one occasion, and Linnell, my wife, did the same thing. We would sit in the Whirlpool, and there would be Oprah, and we would chat amiably. And,
oh, how about that?
You know, so.
Yes.
And
before she struck it big, I guess.
Before she started giving away cars. She was not giving away cars back in those days.
Right, exactly.
So you do meet some really, you know, people who absolutely even turn out to be right. more interesting than you had any idea.
I don't have any Oprah stories, but one of the first people that I remember seeing in the gym, I had already met him, and I would work out the same time he worked out, was Martin O'Malley.
Yeah,
next
me too.
Soon to be the mayor, and then soon to be the governor of Maryland. So, yeah, a lot of that's about the most famous guy.
The night of the gubernatorial election in which he defeated Mr. Ehrlich and won the governorship, he came to the DAC to work out before going to his you know, party, which he didn't know whether it was going to be a victory party or a concession speech.
Right.
So yeah, he was a regular down there, you know, Edward Albee, the playwright.
Yes. Well,
we used to work out together. He was down there
at the
DAC.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there were some, you know, notable figures down there.
Yeah.
But the figures in this book they interest me because they all come from, you know, completely different wild place. They would never meet anywhere else other than the gym.
They
are united in common purpose, you know, to find out the background of this guy.
Yeah, I mean, as sophomoric as it sounds, they vow to come up with this little private eye agency, and they're going to look into this guy, who's the other protagonist of the book. And there's a lot of ways.
And we got to tell folks his name.
Oh, sure.
Are we allowed?
Oh, of course.
Because his name is Oven Mitts.
And Oven Mitts Maldonado.
Yeah.
Oven Mitts Malden. Exactly.
Yeah. Oven Mitts Maldonado. Now there's a
right. Without spoiling things, that that has something to do with this terrible crime that he committed. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can say that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And then the circumstances around the crime, you know, come to light. You find out a little bit about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's also in a lot of ways a book about local journalism. Because there's all sorts of scenes between this guy Jack, who is a columnist for the paper,
yes,
and his editors, and you know, what he's pursuing as stories and that kind of stuff. And we're going to talk a little bit about that.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WYPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
And here on Midday, by the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Midday on the Arts. Manuel Barueco, the acclaimed classical guitarist and the founder of the Baltimore Classical Guitar Society, joins me. He's given a concert on Saturday, marking 50 years as a performer on the international stage. James O'Donnell is the organist emeritus of Westminster Abbey in London. He's in town playing a recital and leading an evensong service at Emmanuel Episcopal Church on Sunday. So we'll talk to him about some of the big events that he's played at Westminster Abbey, including the funeral for Queen Elizabeth II. Anna Chalenza of Johns Hopkins University will talk about a census that she's conducting of Baltimore musicians, and Jay Wynn Russick will join me with a review of the Hot Wing King at Baltimore Center Stage. So that's all on the way tomorrow here on Midday. And if you've just joined us today, my guest is Kevin Cowherd. We're talking about his latest book. It's a novel called The Gym. If you'd like to join our conversation, maybe we'll talk a little sports, too, in a little bit. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. That phone number is not the number you use to make a pledge in our membership drive. That number, of course, 410-235-1395. So, Kevin, we were talking right before we went to the break about the decline in local journalism and what that means for our city, what that means for our country. And you lived it. I mean, you were at the Sun at a time of diminution.
Yeah, and it's a big theme in the book too, Tom. It's really sad. It's really heartbreaking to see. Now there are some other upstart news organizations that have really picked up the slack. For me, it's kind of hard to see how diminished the Sun is. But then you have a place like the Baltimore Banner. They're doing great work. And by the way, that's happening in cities all over the country. There are alternate news sites coming up, podcasts, and reporters doing great work. They're just not doing. The print industry is in a stark decline. I don't see how they can pull out of that. You know, it was 11 years ago when I left the Sun, Tom, and I remember thinking, I wonder if there is even going to be a print newspaper in 5 years. Well, there still is. You know, they're struggling to put it out. They have a lot of great, energetic reporters, young people who are doing great work. But there's less and less product, if you want to use that word, in the paper. And it's kind of sad to see.
Yeah, you know, of course, there's a new owner of the paper, the same gentleman who owns the company that owns Fox 45 News.
Yeah.
What's your opinion of how the paper, because I'm sure you still read The Sun every day the way Linnell and I do. We get the hard copy of it delivered to our home.
We do too.
Because we're old-fashioned and we're somewhat nostalgic.
Yep.
And it's interesting. I was talking to another former colleague of yours at The Sun who, you know, left quite a while ago. But we were saying just over the weekend that we don't find at the moment any major editorial change in The Sun. And when I say editorial, I mean the news coverage.
Yes.
We don't see any big change with the new ownership of David Smith, the owner of Sinclair.
Well, I agree with that. And I don't either. I've talked to a number of Sun staffers about that, and they're cautiously optimistic that things haven't worse for them. Let's put it that way. But I think, you know, ownership is doing the right thing, Tom. They're wading into this. They're trying to see what they can do, what works. I mean, look at the rationale for the paper is still news, and they're giving people news. It's just they're not giving people the same kind of news. As far as the op-ed pages go and the editorial page, I think they're being cautious. There have been some more right-wing editorials that you wouldn't see in the past from The Sun. But other than that, I think they're shooting for balance right now. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, on the op-ed page, we're hearing from some conservative voices that we perhaps didn't hear from as frequently in the papers, in The Sun prior.
Yes.
But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's good to hear voices, you know, from all across the spectrum. That's certainly what we try to do here on Midday.
Yes.
I think that's a good thing. But it's interesting that, you know, people were predicting the, you know, immediate demise of The Sun because Mr. Smith does have a track record of being a very conservative person who has, you know, been involved in the political realm as a fundraiser and as a financial supporter.
Yeah, I mean, I think the indication would be felt more strongly on the editorial page as opposed to the op-ed page. But so far, I haven't seen any. It seems like they're coming up with interesting editorials, not politically oriented editorials. I think I think the people who still work at The Sun, the old timers anyway, the long timers they like to be called, are okay with it so far. So, you know, cautiously optimistic that things continue. Although it's tough to put out a print newspaper these days, and you know that The Sun is. Printed up in Delaware, which makes it even harder to get.
And it's assembled still in Chicago.
It's crazy.
It's all done online.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we can't minimize the problems that lie ahead for The Sun, but so far they seem to be surviving. So. Yeah. I'm thrilled with that.
And the Baltimore Banner, which, of course, is a news partner of us here at WIPR, is doing extraordinary work, just extraordinary work. I mean, the coverage of the campaign, the coverage of the Key Bridge, the coverage of, you know, all sorts of issues. You know, you have some people from, you know, some of them erstwhile with The Sun.
Yes.
Who are, you know, doing great work. And I really think that the Banner is making The Sun better. and the sun is making the banner better. Well, because there's some pretty healthy competition going on.
I totally agree, and all you have to do is see the coverage of the bridge collapse, because the sun is doing great work with
that
too, as is the banner. They're putting everybody on this story, and they're just flooding the zone. And yeah, to your point, I think that both organizations are kind of pushing each other, and that can only be, as far as local journalism goes, that can only be helpful. So.
Yeah, and we have some smaller papers as well. The Brew does wonderful investigative work. We've got The Beat, which is a African-American oriented, fairly new publication that's both in print and online. We've got The Afro, which is, one of the oldest black-centered papers in the country.
Yes.
So, in this particular city, in Baltimore, we're actually luckier than most, because there are lots of places, cities of our size and even larger, who are really in news deserts. They don't have any options. We have a number of options.
And there are a number of cities that no longer have any print newspapers. At least the Sun is still printing. So, it's something to be thankful for.
Yeah, who knows? That may not last, but we'll have to see. Kevin Cowherd's new book is called The Gym. It's a novel about folks involved with each other because of their common goal to show up to the gym and work out a little bit every week. And, of course, one of the gyms here in Baltimore is right across the street from where the Sun used to be headquartered. It's no longer there now. It's a police substation, last I checked, which is interesting. So there is an exercise that is featured in your book, The Gym, which is a terribly masochistic, or if you force someone else to do it, sadistic exercise. It's called a burpee.
And I came late to burpee. I don't do burpees. I don't even like to look at burpees. I don't even want to see anyone else doing burpees. It's a horrible, masochistic is a good word to describe it. However, it also has become, when gyms have contests against each other, burpees often are at the top of the list of exercises that one gym will do in a contest against another gym. I didn't know this at the time. I only found this out about 5 years ago. Everybody hates it. Even the people who claim they don't hate it will eventually tell you they hate it. You drop into a squat thrust. For those people who don't know what we're talking about, you basically drop down to your knees, kick your legs back, do a push-up or a modified push-up, get back into a squat, throw yourself up in the air and put your hands up. Some people, to make the suffering even worse, will clap at the end of a burpees. It's horrible.
This may be why so many gyms have bars in them. With alcohol. After that, you might want to just head right up to the second floor or order yourself a cocktail.
Or have a cocktail before you even start that stuff.
Have the thought that you would want to do that.
They're awful.
They must be good for you, though, right?
I guess they're wonderful for you. If you have any kind of limitations at all, arthritic knees, arthritic shoulders, anything like that, you probably should avoid
burpees. Or a cycle. Psychological, lack of, wanting to hurt yourself.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
If you're free of mental health issues, perhaps,
Perhaps.
Well, this is one of the premises of the book is that there's a contest.
Yes.
Between one gym and another.
Yeah.
Which I've actually never heard of. Have you actually heard of that in real life?
Oh, yes.
So one gym challenges another gym to, exercise?
Yes.
Oh, well, our gym would never do that.
Well, and as I said, burpees are usually at the top of the list when they're trying to figure out, okay, what exercises can we do? Push-up contests, obviously, very, very, are probably number two, but burpees are probably number one in terms of a contest. A fitness contest against another gym. Yeah.
I didn't realize that there were fitness contests between gyms.
Yeah.
Because there are different kinds. There's different vibes at different gyms, aren't there?
Yes, absolutely.
Because when I traveled back in the day when I had a job that required me to travel, I would go to gym. Because our gym here in Baltimore had reciprocal agreements with other gyms around the country. And so I would go. And you could really tell there's a different vibe, as I say.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's really big, Tom, I'm sure you're a big devotee of this is CrossFit. I don't know if you know what CrossFit, do you know what CrossFit is?
I don't.
Okay, well, CrossFit.
I've sort of heard of it, but.
Okay, so CrossFit is a very masochistic working out. People are lifting 500-pound tires, climbing ropes. I don't know if anybody in here does that, but it's a CrossFit gyms are like being in the Marines. You know, I think you have to be a masochist to do that. I really do. So, to your point, different gyms have different things that they embrace. I am not a CrossFit guy, and as anyone who looks at me will tell you that. So,
Kevin Cowherd, his new book is The Gym.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. If you've just joined us, I'm Tom Hall. My guest is the author and former award-winning Baltimore Sun sports columnist Kevin Cowherd. His new book is called The Gym. If you have a comment for Kevin, you can give us a call, 410-662-8780. That's a different number than you use to pledge to WYPR here on our spring fun drive. But you could also send us an email, midday@wypr.org. Let's go to George in Salisbury. George, welcome to the show with Kevin Cowherd.
Hey, good afternoon to both of you, and thanks for what you do. I have addressed this to Kevin Cowherd, if I may.
Sure.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air. What's your question for Kevin?
Hello.
So, George, can you hear us?
Speak with Kevin Cowherd.
Yep, you're on the air. We can hear you. Maybe you can't hear us. I tell you what, George, we're going to come back to you and make sure that your line is together and okay. But, you know, Kevin Cowherd, you did write about sports for The Sun for a long time.
Yes, I did.
And you've had, you know, a chance to work with the great Cal Ripken. Tell us about that. You wrote books for kids about baseball with one of the baseball's greatest players.
Yeah, Cal was spectacular. He was great to work with. So we wrote 6 baseball novels for young readers, Tom. And each of them had different themes. Cal was wonderful to work with. He and I would get together. He would one of us would propose a theme, and he couldn't have been nicer. Books did real well. They were published by Disney Hyperion, and I think Cal enjoyed the process. He said that he had never been part of a writing process like that before. So I think he enjoyed that.
So what was his role? How did you do it? How did you collaborate?
Okay, so for instance, the very first book in that series was called Hothead. And it turns out, I didn't know anything about this, Cal had a terrible temper when he was a young kid. And he would throw bats when he struck out. He would slam his glove down when he committed an error. Finally, somebody took him aside and said, and actually, I think filmed him and said, "Hey, this is what you look like out there." And he was aghast. He couldn't believe it. And so that always stayed with him. The idea that, boy, what a jerk I was. How did I handle misfortune? What a terrible way to handle that. And that became the theme for the first book. Cal's the one who brought that up. He said, you know, this is what I was like.
I never would have guessed that.
Right,
that's
never.
That's wild, isn't it?
Never would have guessed
that. Because he was always
that.
Such a, you know,
right.
Gracious player.
But yeah. His dad told me that, and his mom, too. So, you know, that's so those are the kinds of things we did. We would come up with different themes for different books. And again, Cal was just wonderful to work with.
And, of course, you know, Cal came up as a very young player and, you know, a lot of great expectations, and all of them were met. There's another young man who's just joined the Orioles, just called up a couple of weeks ago, Jackson Holliday. He's had a tough time at the plate. He's been okay in the field, although he had a rough first game. But Jackson Holliday did get a hit. Here's what it sounded like.
And Holliday through the right side. There it is. The first of many. Jackson Holliday with his first major league hit.
And that was about a week ago, I guess. He hasn't had one since.
Yeah.
He's having a rough time. Even last night, of course, the Orioles won big, 11-3 against the Minnesota Twins. Almost everybody got a hit except Jackson. He did not have a good night last night.
I don't know if you were struck by this too, Tom, but Jackson Holliday, after that first hit, said he talked about how the weight of the world had been removed from his shoulders. And I'm really surprised about that. He's so poised. He's been, you know, his dad was an all-star for many years, Matt Holliday. He's been around the game. He knows that, you know, you might go 12 games without getting a hit. And yet it shows you the kind of pressure on this young guy that he got that hit and he in front of reporters, he said, you know, the weight of the world has been lifted from my shoulders. So if even a guy like Jackson Holliday acts like that, it shows you the tremendous pressure in this game with all these young guys. And Jackson Holliday, by the way, is not the only guy in the Orioles going through that. You know, you have all these other young guys.
Austin Hayes is having a tough time.
Kowser, I mean, they're all, you know, people are, they're all trying to prove themselves, but it doesn't happen right away. And people forget it's a 162-game season. I mean, you know, you can't.
They play a lot.
They play a lot, and just because you have a bad day, you know, you can't say, well, this is how it's going to be for the next week. It could change tomorrow night.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, at the very beginning of the season, he hadn't been called up. They kept him in the minors, and there are people who questioned that decision because he had a great spring training.
Right.
He was, you know, a fabulous, he was living up to his potential, you know, right away. And so then they questioned that decision. Then they brought him up.
Right.
And now people are questioning that decision. Of course,
right.
Questioning decisions, you
right.
know, as a fan is something that it's, you know, it's a right. full-time job for
right.
some of us. Right.
Well, and it's so, you know, Mike Elias, who has been questioned more than Mike Elias? I mean, you know, it's just.
He's the general manager.
He's the general
manager.
He's
brought up all these young stars, Gunnar Henderson, Kowser, et cetera.
And you look at it, he's been, I mean, for the most part, like a chess master here. I mean, he's made all the right moves, brought up people when he should. The Orioles are struggling a little bit now with their pitching because they have three pitchers.
The latest one,
Tyler Wells, is probably going to head to the disabled list. So they're struggling, but the team has enormous promise. The fans are energized. It's great to go to a game now. People are so into the Orioles.
Did you see the catch? The other night of Cedric Mullins.
Fabulous.
If you haven't seen it, folks, you got to check it out on YouTube. Here's what it sounded like. Cedric Mullins, an unbelievable athlete.
2-2. And Farmer hits a line drive sailing away from Mullins.
Oh!
An impossible catch. Oh, my goodness. Tip your cap, Cole Irvin. Tip your cap, everybody. Cedric Mullins, insane in center.
Insane indeed.
Insane.
It was a fantastic catch. I can only say, if you haven't seen it, check it out on MLB.com.
Unbelievable.
It's fantastic.
Look how
what a joy he is to watch play.
Absolutely. And look how far he had to run for that ball.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the diving part, that's great. But he had to catch up to that ball.
Yeah, he did. Let's go to the phones. Angela's on the line from West Baltimore. Angela, I understand you're a fitness instructor. So let's talk to Kevin about his novel, The Gym. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to hear you. I've been a fitness instructor since 1999, and I teach Zumba and all kinds of fitness formats. I love burpees, by the way.
so you're the one.
I'm the one, right? Yeah, but I'm legally blind, and I have a kidney and a pancreas transplant. And I'm just wondering what you have to say about accessibility issues in gyms and just kind of the culture around ableism and things like that.
Yeah, that's a great point. And boy, good for you that, you know, you've had these issues and you're still out there doing it, even doing burpees. But yeah, I mean,
that's amazing.
Accessibility is important everywhere, but it's certainly important at the gym. We've had a couple of folks at our gym in wheelchairs, and always good to see them.
Yeah, we have two people in walkers, you know, that happens too. Absolutely. I mean, I think all these gyms are, first of all, they want members, obviously. But yeah, it's an important point. She brings up a great point. And you can do burpees okay? You're okay with that?
Yeah, I get it done. You know, you work with what you have, right? You got to keep moving.
Yeah.
And do you, I already know the answer to this question, but do you enjoy it?
Actually, I do.
Really?
I really do. I mean, it's challenging and, you know, I guess I'm from that school of, you know, if you can, once you do one, and you get through it, then you push yourself to do another. So it's all about that mentality of doing the best you have with what doing the best that you can with what you have.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at life in general. Yeah. Angela, you're an inspiration to us all. And, you know, I think it is a feeling of accomplishment, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, folks who complete their first 5K or half marathon or something. I mean, you do it because you can then say you did it.
Yeah, but Angela, I got to tell you something. I sat in on a CrossFit class with about 20 people, men and women, young and old, doing burpees. And there were no smiles on any faces there. There was only grimacing and agony. So your point of view and the way you're approaching this is wonderful, because I haven't seen people happy or even, you know, okay during a burpee session. So good for you.
Well, thank you, Angela, for that call. I appreciate it. And thank you for bringing up the very, very important point about accessibility in gyms and everywhere else. So I'm told that George in Salisbury is back on the line. George, are you with us?
I'm with you right now. I'm listening to you through the telephone here.
Okay, great. So you're here with Kevin Cowherd.
About what was just discussed. You may look at people when they're challenging themselves and they look unhappy, but when you learn to meet these people in other venues, they're very happy people because they're fit. So,
I totally agree. And the other
they're challenging themselves to accomplish something they never dreamed they could do.
No, you're right, George. But also, once they accomplish this, to your point, they might look like they're unhappy, but once they do it, I know that there's this tremendous feeling of satisfaction. So you're absolutely right.
Listen, I called for another reason. I just wanted to get some documentation with some things I don't know about. I was away from Maryland for about 40 years or so, and I came back in the last 2.5 to 3 years, and Tom's show has sort of kept me in touch, even though I have trouble getting your station sometimes because of interference over the airwaves. But it's really struck my curiosity about reading, and I'm glad that you're writing books, because I still read books. And I'd like to ask you about some of the people you work with, like Bill Tanton, Larry Knoll, Dan Rodericks, Jim Hammond. And I just found that Jim's still working with the Orioles, even though he's a little older than I. He's about 3 or 4 years older than I. He went to the same school I did at Loyola College.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, George. I appreciate the call. So some names from your sordid past there,
absolutely.
Kevin Cowherd.
Absolutely. Well, Jim Henneman, when I was hired as a columnist at the Evening Sun in 1981, Jim Henneman was the beat writer covering the Orioles. So we became fast friends. Terrific baseball man. Knows everything there is about the game. Bill Tanton was a colleague of mine early on. So the people that he named, I have a lot of fond memories of those folks.
Kevin Cowherd, his latest book is called The Gym. I appreciate it. It's always good to see you. And
great
congratulations
to see you,
Tom. On the novel.
Thanks,
really,
pal.
Really great.
Great seeing you.
All right. That's it for us today here on Midday. Coming up tomorrow, it's Midday on the Arts. I'm going to speak with the famed classical guitarist Manuel Barreco, former Westminster Abbey organist James O'Donnell, theater critic Jay Wynn Russick, and Anna Chalenza. She's a scholar from Johns Hopkins who's doing a census to survey the Baltimore music scene. So I hope you can join us then, and thanks for joining us today and every day on Midday. Your support makes this and all of the programs you hear on WYPR possible.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.